Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's August 14th, 2015. You're listening to the best poker cast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Seattle Scott.
You getting into your grunge out there, buddy?
All right, man, yeah.
Having some coffee?
I'm in Nirvana out here.
Somebody once told me that Nirvana was the most overrated band ever, and I punched them in the face.
That might have been me, and I'm still recovering from that.
They were not overrated.
You were brought up yesterday. I was out at the Safeco Field. There was a little no hitter thrown yesterday, by the way. I just happened to see.
Oh, it must be rough.
And there was one of our former Ante Up Cruise dealers, and they went to the bar afterwards, and they played nonstop Rush at this bar.
Yes.
And he was in heaven, and I'm like, what is wrong with you people?
Yes. It's respect, baby. R-E-S-P-E-C-T. Find out what it means to Geddy Lee. Hey,
we had a drink at the hotel that Ted Bundy stayed in last night.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, is that the second, like, perfect game or no-hitter that you've seen while you were on the road?
Second no-hitter, yes.
For Ante Up? That's crazy.
Both completely random, just showing up in town to knock off another stadium off the list, and, hey, no-hitter, thank you.
That's crazy. Unbelievable. You know what? People are going to start paying to have you show up at their stadiums.
That's what I'm saying, right? I think Seattle and Anaheim should just fly me out for every game.
Hey, every time I've gone to the Yankee Stadium and the new stadium, they have not lost. So they should give me season tickets. That's what I'm saying. All right, let's get to it. We have a world champion.
Yeah, absolutely. Brand new world champion. And it was almost the same world champion as we had last year, which would have been amazing, I think. Justo Avalos, who won last year's Ante Up World Championship, said he wanted to go back-to-back, and darn it, if he fell just short this year, he lost heads-up to Cy Williams, who's the golf coach at UC Davis. Pretty cool.
That is awesome.
And this year's main event at Thunder Valley Casino Resort, I unfortunately missed it because I was up here in Portland and Seattle having fun, but that was pretty amazing. I've been watching this for a while, obviously from a distance, and as we'll mention here in a minute, a lot of our past Ante Up champions were doing really well and went far, and then I just kept watching Justo, and I'm like, wow, this guy is actually going to do it again. We had the final table, and I'm like, he can't do it, and then I heard his heads up, I'm like, wow, this is great, and then I woke up in the morning, I'm like, oh, he fell short, but that's all right. Very excited for our new champion, Cy Williams, who will be on the cover of the next issue of Ante Up magazine. It sounds like a really nice guy. And I mentioned our previous Ante Up champions, Michael Loncar from Thunder Valley and Heather Reese from Pensacola, Greyhound Track, both cashed in the main event, which was great. And Tona Catquill was second and chipped going to day two and got knocked out just before the money bubble. That kind of sucks.
Yeah.
And he was our winner at the 101 casino this year. Yep. And then Jerry Silva from Derby Lane also advanced in day two. So these players that won our previous events, they got game. None of them got lucky.
No, you know, and it does so much for the profile of the tour, too, to see that these people are actually taking advantage of the seat, going out there and playing well and doing well. They're going to, you know, this is some legitimate champions here. It's not just some random thing. And I'm really happy that Jerry Silva went out, because when I covered that event, he was, like, real interested in, like, selling the seat or doing something with it. He's like, I don't know if I'm going to go. And now he ended up going. I'm sure he had a great time. I'm sure he fell in love with Thunder Valley. Played till day two. I'm sure he got a lot out of it, and I'm just real happy he went and did well, too. That's great.
Yeah, he had some travel difficulties getting out here, too. I didn't get a chance to talk to him, but then Ben Irwin, the director of poker, did, and so, yeah, he got out here eventually and obviously played well, and you know, Heather Reese from Pensacola. Folks remember back in November when she won that. She actually won the trip to Thunder Valley on last hand.
Last hand, that's right.
Yeah, they all decided to chop everything up, and I'm like, hey, whoa, we need to figure out who's going to cover, who's going to Thunder Valley, and they're like, oh, let's play one last hand, and who wins, heads up, or face up.
Face up, right.
And so she was the lucky one, and she came out. Unfortunately, her husband couldn't make it, but she came out by herself, had a great time. She cashed in the PLO event the night before and cashed in this event. And she was another one, too, when she won. She's like, yeah, I don't know if I'll be able to go out or not, and end up making it out there and having a good time. So
that's sweet.
And part of that was our champion steak dinner, which we host every year. Ben Irwin's very good about taking care of all of our winners, and Matt Savage, who was there running our last couple events for us, comes to dinner too, and a really great steak dinner, filet mignon and wine and all kinds of stuff. It's really nice, nice treat for all of our winners, and everybody really appreciated that. And then we had our Holiday Charity Classic winner also won a trip out there, and she cashed, Christy Camuso, I think it is. She cashed an event earlier, didn't made it to day two of the World Championship, didn't cash, but it was great. And then her friend Amy Alvarez, who's the tournament director of Daytona Beach, came out with her.
Yeah.
And, she cashed it last night, but all three of them and Heather just enjoyed dinner with us and had a great time. And they talked about, obviously raved about the resort, as everybody does when they go out there, and looking forward to next year's event. So always excited when things go well.
That's so cool.
So I played a couple more tournaments since we last talked, I think one of them was the horse event. I don't know if I talked. Well, maybe I did mention I did horribly on that.
Yeah.
But I played two more since then. And so one, I got a question for you. Another one, I got an obvious brag, right? So I'll do the obvious brag first, the open-faced Chinese, which I started right after the champions dinner. So I had four glasses of wine. Sat down at the Chinese, and I'm like, oh, boy, this is not going to be good. Turned out to be good. I had a couple of nice last poles and made the final table, finished fourth. And so I ended this trip with three caches and two final tables.
Nice. Yeah. Nice rally there, yeah. Buddy.
Absolutely. Just got our Hand in Mob pages uploaded, updated with all the results. And I am now like the 58,268th chip most money earned in the United States. So got that going for me.
I mean, they break it down into who's won the most on the Antioch Poker Tour. I mean, you're still probably the same number, but still, that's great.
It's really funny to look through all my results. All of them are Antioch Tour events or cruises, except for one is the Grand Poker Series, which actually was an Antioch Tour Series. They just didn't mention it in the list, though. but okay, so here's an interesting dilemma I faced, and curious what you think. So the night before the Chinese, I was in the Heads Up tournament. And but first of all, I drew a bye in the first round, which was really nice in the Heads Up, right?
Yeah.
But they had a little break, so they did. It's really cool how they do the Heads Up brackets. They if you're registered 15 minutes before the start of the event, they put all those names and numbers in a ball and a bag and pull them out, and that's how you draw.
Okay.
They previously, and they knew they had, I think, 14 byes at that point. So they drew the byes, put those on the board first, then drew your names out, so I drew a bye, right?
Right.
In that 15 minutes, obviously people could still register for the event, and anybody registered from that point was in a second drawing to fill in the bye spots. So really fair way of doing it. So every time somebody registered, they came over, they picked out another ball, and I'm like, yes, not mine. Yes, not mine. My last guy that came over pulled it out. Oh, I'm actually going to have to play. And had them like 3-1 in chips after a couple good hands, and then he cracked my aces, and then boom, gone.
Oh, brutal.
But a very good Heads Up event, by the way. All four people that moved to the final four, late registers. but anyway, so I got knocked out, so I wasn't playing the Pot Limit Omaha event that night, but since I had nothing else to do, I played, right? And again, my pocket aces got cracked. Ace-ace double suited. Flush on the board, and it's not one of my suits, it's the other guy's suit.
Jeez.
Knocked out, and I'm like, all right, at this point, I'm even for the trip. I got the Chinese tomorrow. I don't really want to go in my pocket, I don't think. And then I'm like, well, what else am I going to do? I can't get on the cash game. They're all full, right? So I look, and we were, it's PLO, so it's a fast game, right?
Yeah.
We're betting draws and missing them and knocked out. So I thought about reentry was still open. All right, so there were 24 players left, 8 cash. because, you know, a lot of people bumped out already, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I re-entered that point, I would start with 12 big blinds. Do you re-enter?
I don't think so.
1-3 shot of cashing.
Yeah, it's 1-3 shot, but you got basically one decent hand.
Right.
So you can spend all that money for one hand and hope you double through on that one hand, and if you don't, you're out, and it's PLO, so it's like 50-50 on that. I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think I re-enter. I think I just let it go and go to bed or something. I don't think so. I don't think that's enough. I mean, it'd be one thing if there's like 100 people in the field and, you know, you had a lot of time and you had more big blinds than that. That 12 big blinds is just a lottery kind of thing. I don't want to flip a coin for another buy-in. You know, I don't think so. I think I sit it out.
All right. Well, I made the choice that you did.
Yeah,
you probably just cost some money. Thank you.
Oh, dang. What happened?
Now, so the funny thing was, as I was thinking about this, Heather Reese, our champion from Pensacola, who plays almost nothing but Big O back in Pensacola, big huge games back there,
mm-hmm.
And she had meant to enter the PLO, but was just crushing the cash table at that point, and like, you know, I'm going to make a lot more money at the cash table than I'm in that event. And then the game changed, she said. So she wandered over and she said, hey, can I still get in? We're like, yeah. And she's looking up at the board. It's all the same thing I saw, right? And she's like, yeah, 12 big blinds. I guess I got to pick a hand and go. I'm going to re-enter. And she entered and cashed.
Yeah, but you're not the quality player she is, so yeah.
Oh, I understand that. But she still had to get lucky with that one hand.
I know. You had to get lucky, though.
That's what it came down to, right? It's a $235 coin flip at that point. If you get that, shove that one hand in and do all right, then you got a good chance of cashing because you're 1-3 players from cashing at that point.
Yeah, I just don't like that. You know, what if you don't get that hand? What if the hand never shows up? Then you're going in with like 6 big blinds. Then you're only doubling back up to what you started with, which means you have to double up twice to even have a chance. And you're doing it for $235. I don't think so. I'd rather go take the money and put it on black or something.
I did not do that either, though. So.
I think you made the right choice. I don't know. I mean, if people want to write it and talk about it, you know, and make a comment or do it on the Poker Radius, that's fine. I'd like to see what they have to say. But to me, I don't think it's worth $235 to say, okay, I'm going to try one hand and double up. So, no, I just stayed out of it.
All right. Good.
Good.
I came home with more money than I came out with, so I was...
Good.
If I would have thought that, then I might have broke even.
Good job, buddy. Hey, I'm going to let you read our friend David Bloomberg's email, because when I read it myself, I'm like George Costanza when he has the books on tape and the guy reading it has the same voice as him, and so he doesn't learn from it. So I tried to read this, and there are some parts that I'm just not getting. So I figured maybe if you read it, I'll comprehend it better. Maybe it's my ADD or whatever, I don't know. But why don't you just read it for me, and then I'll see if I can understand it better.
I think it's more the Connecticut school system upbringing. But.
Okay.
All right, so, you know, Dave Bloomberg, one of our super fans that writes in often, he wrote in, this has been something we've been hanging around for a while until we had a chance to get on the show, but here's what he said. He says, I've been trying to catch up on TiVo'd shows and was watching the May 6th episode of CSI Cyber. Ugh. Well,
jeez.
Already ugh because, geez, how many people watch CSI?
Is that show even on anymore?
I thought David Bloomberg was our age, but apparently he's 80, so... So the setup is a guy has implanted malware on a medical site to sell fake meds and needed a way to launder his money and pay the people doing the dirty work for him. So, of course, he used online poker. One character of the show, a reformed hacker, said hackers use poker sites all the time to launder money. I call BS. But it went beyond that. We see the guy go to an online site and play Heads Up No Limit. He goes all in, the other player passes. Yes, that's what it shows on the screen. Pass. The cards runs out and he folds, so the other player, either an employee of his or another of his accounts, wins the money. Wow, so many things wrong with this. First, what the hell is a pass? Never heard of that once at Texas Hold'em. You can bet, call, raise, or fold. If somebody else goes all in, you can call or fold, period. Is it really that hard to get terminology like that correct? I mean, this is a show spun off from an original taking place in Vegas. Anyway, if we ignore pass and presume it's a new way of saying call, then the criminal player can't fold his hand after the runout, at least not on any side I've ever seen. In one case, he specifically noted that he folded after hitting a full house. Which brings up the next bad part of the story. How did the FBI crew catch this guy? They get full access granted by the poker site. I don't think so. This wasn't taking place in Vegas, New Jersey, or Delaware. It was clearly a U.S.-facing site. That means there's no way in hell this site would cooperate with the freaking FBI. I've seen this show screw up some technical stuff before, but this one just blew me away. It's not technical. It's simple poker.
You know, CSI and I think SVU, that Law and Order SVU, they did the same thing. They just totally just don't get it. How hard is it to just get one guy who knows what the hell he's doing? We say this every time. It's up poker's on TV or in the movies. I mean, really, how hard is it to get one guy to just look it over for a second and go, yeah, don't put the word pass on the screen. All right. One thing that – this is what confused me. This is why I had you read it was – I've heard the term pass be used, but it means fold.
Right.
It means I fold or whatever. I'm not taking my – so this guy passed. He meant he called? That's what I'm trying to figure out. He called the all-in by passing?
I think the pass in this sense – you're right. I've heard pass as used as a fold before too. But I think in this case, apparently, you get the option of calling at that point, and no, we'll see what the rest of the cards are and then decide later. Apparently is what it sounds like happened.
That's just hilarious.
I didn't improve. That would be awesome if some guy is all in. You're like, eh, I'll pass. I'll see the rest.
Now
of the
I'll fold. Yeah, let me see all the cards first, and then
Oh, excellent. Quads. Yeah, I call.
See, now that would be a great game of Hold'em where you could see all the cards before committing your money. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, that would be great for growing the game, wouldn't it?
Oh, that's just terrible. And people wonder why, one, that they think poker is luck, you know. Two, that they think only lowlifes play poker. You know what I mean? Well, because people present it this way on TV, and then the common denominators watching it are like, well, that must be the way poker is. I'm not playing this game. Not fair. Well, of course it's not fair because they're idiots. It's just not right. They need to have, you know, and they have the experts on the show, and then they credit them, like, special thanks to. They need to have, like, Negreanu on, like assigned to a network as the poker editor. And anytime poker comes up in any show on, like, CBS, they need to call Negreanu and say, okay, here's what we want to do. And he'll help them out.
I've got a better idea, Chris.
Okay.
So you know at the end of the movie when they say the National Society to prevent cruelty from animals?
Yeah, no animals were hurt. Yeah.
Right. We need a national association to prevent cruelty to poker. That needs to be on site for any movie or TV show that mentions poker. And make sure that it's done properly.
No poker morals were hurt in the filming of this episode. Yeah, that's just sad. But, you know, I'm glad he's watching. You know what? It's funny that he brought up TV because I was flicking through the channels last night. And the NBC Sports Network had on the special high roller program. It was like a marathon coming from the Aria. And I was like, whoa. And, of course, the episode I put on was all celebrities. Hank Azaria and Don Cheadle and Norm MacDonald and Brad Garrett. You know, and I'm watching it, and I'm like, let's see if I like watching poker on TV again. No. It took, like, all of one hand. They're all just being dorks, and they're playing horribly. And I'm just like, oh, poker on TV. I used to love it so much. Now I can't even watch it anymore. It drives me crazy. I mean, I could watch, like, the World Series. Don't get me wrong. When that comes back on in, like, a week or whatever, it's coming on soon. You know, I'll probably tune in on Tuesdays or whatever and give it a look and see if I recognize any of our friends or anything like that. Maybe give it a watch. But that made-for-TV stuff with celebrities, oh, it's so bad.
Yeah.
No offense. I mean, you know.
Celebrity Poker Showdown used to get excited when it was come out. Oh, it's Tuesday night.
Yeah. Dave Foley. Dave Foley was awesome, though.
He was.
I love Dave Foley. He was hilarious. But, yeah. All right, got some Annie updates here. Our most popular viewer contest is now in its final stage. Vote for Leslie Mesmer, Emily Clemens, Brittany Thomas, Barbara Jones, or Miranda Miller at AnnieUpMagazine.com/MPD. You can vote once for each social network account you have, Facebook, Twitter, or Google+. Also, don't forget, Dover Downs in Delaware will host our first Annie Up Set Sales Series September 3rd to the 7th, and then the Annie Up Poker Tour Championship event will be at Pearl River Resort in Mississippi, October 1st through the 12th. Winners of both will appear on the cover of Annie Up Magazine. Details on all Annie Up Poker Tour events can be found at AnnieUpPokerTour.com.
Yeah, and Dover just announced another set sale series for October, and we'll have those details on next week's show.
Yes. All right, each week we spotlight a listener who called our hotline at 206-338-6344 or emailed us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we'll send them something cool. Comes from Turdzilla. Love that name. He says, can you use an app slash program like Flopzilla? No relation. Or a strategy card when you're playing live? And I will say yes. You can use the strategy card. We used to have our good friend Donnie, right, and his poker wheel.
The whiz wheel.
You used to take that. The beginners used to hand them out and as raffles and stuff like that. And you could take those. People, they encourage that. You go to play blackjack, they give you the little thing. You could do those. So I don't see why not. I don't know what they would say about the app or the program. But I don't think that could be a problem either, right? Would that be a problem?
This is what I would say. If it's electronic like that, you're not going to be allowed to be on it in the middle of a hand. So
right.
If the question is, can I use a program in the middle of a hand? No, you can't.
Right.
And also be curious whether if you just whipped out some kind of strategy card thing, you're looking through it, like a paper one in the middle of a hand, whether someone would say something. I would imagine they probably would, but I don't know. I've never actually seen anybody do that. But certainly, once you fold, if you want to go back and check and find out whether that was a good fold or bad fold, or once you get it all in and runs out, you know, what your odds were, and use that to learn for the next time you're in that situation, absolutely. Nothing keeping you from doing anything at the table, you know, outside of a hand. But in a hand, yeah, I think you got to be focused on the cards, or someone's going to say something to you.
I don't know though. Is that true? Because I know, like,
I don't know. Well, definitely if you're on your phone,
right, that you can't. But like the strategy cards, I've seen them. I've seen people see like what beats what sitting on their next to them while they're playing poker. So I think I've seen that. Also, your favorite movie, Cincinnati Kid, right? The guy's going over the odds. Right, he's got the little notepad, and he's like, "All right, I like the odds. I'm calling." And then he puts all his money in the middle. The guy with the glasses and the professor type teacher.
So you're going to use a Hollywood example?
Yeah, because we proved how credible it is. No, but seriously, I think I have seen people at the table, and I've never. It might have been at that charity event in Daytona.
And of course, you're talking a charity event.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of. There's probably a scale here. There's probably, if you're in a charity event, people are going to be more forgiving of it. If it's just a what beats what thing, people are probably going to be more accepting of it. But if you've got like John Gruden on the sideline with your all of your plays scripted and stuff like that, and you're referring to it in the middle of a hand, there might be a couple of rooms or some players that might say, "Hey, that's not cool."
Okay,
but I don't know. I don't know.
Well, we should make it a Call the Floor. That's what we should do.
I was just out with Elliot yesterday. He went to see, I don't know if I mentioned this, but I saw a no-hitter yesterday.
Yeah.
But I should have asked him. You're right.
Hey, you should ask him. Well, that's what we'll do. We'll make it one of those vicarious Call the Floors. It's like living through.
Not an official one.
Not a real one. Yeah, we'll just make it up like, But, speaking of Call the Floor, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com. We'll have Snoqualmie Casino Director of Poker, Elliot Schechter, tell you how he would have ruled. This week's prize is an upgrade membership to PokerRadius.com, poker's best social networking site and home of the Antiup group discussions. Comes from JD. He says, he's in a 1-2 no-limit home game, first to act on the river, and he's counting out a bet before the villain says, "I call whatever you bet." I did not put out a bet yet or verbalize one. If I put out a bet, is the villain required to call it, or is it just an angle shoot, and I should not let his comment dictate my play?
Elliot says, this was an angle shoot and pretty poor form of intimidation. By virtue of this statement, the opposing player yielded the button to you, which was rather nice of him. The correct way to enforce the rule is, if you bet, he must call. If you check, he must check. Also, if you bet, he cannot raise. He should be given a warning or a stiffer penalty. If he continues to make this move, a much more serious penalty should be considered by the person running the game.
So this isn't to be confused with the contingent statements, right? Where if he said, if you bet, I'll call, then that's different, right?
Right.
Because it's an if statement. Okay, so that's what he's saying. So because it was a definitive statement, I'm going to do this, then he had to live by whatever you did.
Right.
Right, okay. That's what makes sense.
Now, of course, angle shooters do this on purpose, right? So, I mean, as Elliot says, it's nice of him to give you the button, but obviously he's got an intention here, I would think. So, right. So now you got to get into his head, is this an intimidation factor where he's trying to tell us, hey, I've got you crushed, so whatever you bet, I'm going to call, and be careful what you bet. And trying to keep you to bed low, because he doesn't have much, but so you got to figure that out. So it is an angle shoot that can be effective, so that's why it needs to be shut down by the room or somebody's running it.
Here's something I would like to suggest. This was a home game, so that wouldn't work here. But if you're in a casino and this exact situation happens again, I would tell the dealer to call the floor. The floor would come over and you'd say, listen, this is what he said. I want to know what the ramifications are. Because if I want to go all in now, he has to call my all in. Let's say you want to go all in, but you want to make sure you're going to get paid off now. Because then if he tries folding, they call the floor, and you might somehow have a wrong interpretation, different than Elliot's. So if you're in a poker room and this happens, just because Elliot said it, doesn't mean that floor there is going to rule that way. So make sure you get that, because if you want that money, make sure you get that guy to come over and say, yes, if you go all in, he has to call now. Then you go all in, and he has to call.
That there are a lot of term and directions I've talked to that will not give you an answer to that question when they call. I mean, it doesn't mean you shouldn't call, because you might get that answer.
Right.
But they might come over and say, hey, I can't, you know, play your hand the way you want to play it, and then we will deal with this at the end of the hand, which is likely, you know, hey, dude, that was the wrong thing to say. You know, all right, so you have to call now, or you don't have to call, or whatever, and we're going to give you a pound.
I would say, hypothetically.
I'm just asking.
Just asking.
If I half time here.
Hey, guess what? We got O'Malley's move to complete today. We're going to refresh our memories here. Here comes part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're playing $2, $5, Nolan and Hold'em in a casino setting. We are familiar to the room and know a couple of people at the table. We've been playing even-keeled all night and have only made about $15 so far. We sit with 5-15, and the table is nine-handed. We're about 4 hours into the session. The blinds post, the under-the-gun raises to 25, an MP calls, and we're on the cutoff with the 9 of spades, 8 of spades. We make the call, as does the button. The blinds fold. With four of us going to a flop and $100 already in the pot, we see a beauty. The queen of spades, jack of diamonds, 10 of hearts comes down. Perfect. Exactly what we wanted with this hand, a flop straight. The under the gun and pre-flop aggressor leads out for $50, exactly half the pot. The MP folds, and with the ignorant end of a flopped straight, we're not going to get too cute with this. We double the bet to 100. The button thinks only for a short amount of time before putting in 250. He started the hand with 600 and has played tight poker all night while mixing up his game with aggressiveness and passivity. The under the gun shoves for his remaining $800. This player has been a bit of a lag, but seems to know when to make the proper moves. He's also flipped over two stone-cold bluffs while raking in pots. So, can we fold this made hand here? Is that the proper play? Or are we good? What's the move?
I think we have to give serious credence to the under-the-gun possibly having ace-king, since he raised pre-flop and has 4-bet this flop. I think the worst any of our opponents have is an open-ender, and since our only outs to improve are runner-runner spades, I'm going to fold. Go ahead. Call me a nit. I've been called worse.
Well, I'm going to have to make the show vanilla again and agree with my co-host. Though I will disagree with you that you're being a nit. I think this is sound advice. This is sound thinking through this hand. We have significant action from an under-the-gun player. And the button, who wasn't a bit fazed by our raise. I'm out.
Yeah, good points.
Yeah. All right, here we go, part two.
Hello again. This wasn't as difficult to play when you really break it down. The under the gun was aggressive pre-flop and has not slowed down at all, betting and raising the whole way to the point of committing most of his entire stack. Meanwhile, the button wasn't scared out by all the action that occurred prior to his re-raising to 250 on the flop. With two heavyweights duking it out over this one, I just don't think we've got what it takes to stay in. There's not really a draw that makes sense for both of them to be on. There's no flush draw. The best we could hope for is something like set over set, or maybe set over king-king. Either way, this feels like we're behind at least one made hand, ace-king. We fold, the button can't wait to get his chips in the middle, and each player turns over a monster. The Under the Gun shows tens for bottom set, and the button turns over ace-king for the nuts, Broadway. And wouldn't you know it, the board comes with running fours to give the Under the Gun a full house and a massive stack, much to the button's dismay. I'm just glad we got out of there. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, don't fall too much in love with a made hand. You've still got to put the story together. A flop straight could as easily be a quick double up as a bust out. I hope to see you on the felt.
Well, I had ace-king pegged as one of the hands. I just had the wrong guy.
You knew it was one or the other, though. I would raise Under the Gun with 10-10, so...
Yeah, but I don't think I would 4-bet all in with bottom set on that board, right?
Yeah, maybe not. Yeah. But it's no surprise there. We knew those two hands had to be out, or at least... You know, a set and the mage straight with the ace king. So it's a good fold. I think it's a good folder.
Good job, O'Malley. All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@ntfmagazine.com. This week's prize is 1 month of free poker strategy videos from One Hand at a Time, home of poker instructional videos online. AnteUp listeners save $30 by registering at onehandatatime.com/AnteUp. Well, actually, it's onehandatatime.com/AnteUp. Sorry.
Oh, there you go.
There we go. Fix that. onehandatatime.com/Annie. There you go.
There you go.
This week's comes from Stephen Michalik.
I would say Michalik.
Michalik. That sounds better.
Yeah,
that sounds stronger.
Yeah.
All right. So this past Saturday, and it literally was this past Saturday, came in a couple days ago. He was playing in the Saturday morning $71 no limit hold'em tournament at the Meadows Casino in Washington, PA, just outside Pittsburgh.
Yeah, we were there.
He says, at this point, I have just moved to this table after my original table busted and have seen seven hands thus far. There are 20 of the 32 entrants remaining in four cash, with the winner receiving $845 American dollars. On the second hand, after the first 15-minute break, we're at level 7, blinds are 400, 800 with a 100 ante, and I'm under the gun, sitting with 22 big blinds, 17,800 in chips. And I am dealt 10 of clubs, 9 of clubs.
Oh, man. You know, 9-10 is one of my favorite hands, not just because it's my birthday, but I just like it. It can do a lot of damage.
Well, let me correct you. This is actually 10-9, not 9-10.
It's 9-10 to me, so...
That makes a difference.
Yeah, so... But I don't know if I'm going to come into the hand, I am going to come in with this hand raising. It's just, I don't know if I want to come under the gun, whatever, with 9-10. I don't know. So I don't know. I guess if I'm going to play it, I would raise probably 1,700, something like that. But I just don't know if I would play this hand under the gun. I really don't know if I would. Sometimes I would. I mix it up. You know, it's a nice little hand. It's no different than something like 7-8. You know what I mean? It's the same sort of hand. And if I'm going to play it, I am going to play it for a raise. But just generally, I'm folding hands like this under the gun. It's not powerful. And I'm not saying that I can't get creative and I don't always have to play ABC, but seven hands at a table. First of all, bravo for remembering that there were seven hands before this hand came up. That's remarkable. But to me, I don't know if I would play 9-10 under the gun, at least that soon at the table. I don't know.
I think you got two options here. If you want to play this, I think you got to shove, which sounds pretty crazy, but you have 22 big blinds. So, I mean, I guess you could make one standard raise, but what happens when someone raises you here?
Right.
Are you going to go to mat with this hand when somebody else is taking the aggression from you? I don't think that seems pretty smart. So, and going all in with it seems a little ridiculous here, though it's such a decent stack that you might get a bit of fold and pick up the blinds if that helps, but you also seem to be taking quite a risk to win 2,400 there. So if none of that sounds great to you, I definitely think folding is the way to go here. But if you really, really want to play this hand and don't want to go all in, and the table's been passive, which I don't know, seven tables, whether you can really have a good read on that. You might want to limp here and just see if you can get a cheap flop and hit hard.
Yeah, I couldn't possibly think of shoving with 22 big blinds under the gun. I'm only going to get called by a hand that has me crushed. And that's just such an over bet. I mean, I know that people are getting away from the 10 big blind shoving rule. It needs to be maybe 20 sometimes. But to me, 22 big blind under the gun, it'd be one thing if I was on the button and it got to me. That's one thing, but under the gun, I have so many players behind me that pretty much any hand that would think about calling is either going to have us crushed or it's a race, and or it's just absolutely annihilating us. So I like the limp. I just don't like to limp under the gun. I mean, it looks suspicious when you do that, and so maybe yep. they'll think you have ace-ace, and I don't know, maybe that'll work out for your benefit. I just don't like... I don't like to play hands under the gun unless they're strong. Or if I've been doing it for a while and then I can mix it up. I've only been there... If I've only been there seven hands, to me, I don't have any image. So to raise with that hand, you know, you're going to have to represent whatever comes out, and I don't know. It just seems pretty... And to shove seems really risky when I don't know these players or what they're going to do like after just seven hands. So, yeah, I'm with you. I wouldn't mind limping if I knew I can get away with it. But if I couldn't get away with a limp, I'm going to probably just fold this hand.
Yeah, I don't want to just throw a big blind away for no reason. So, but this is kind of where I've been working on my game, too. I think 15 big blinds or less is when I'm shove or fold.
No matter where you are in a table?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, there's some differences depending on how things go, but generally speaking, that's kind of what I'm doing. And between 15 and 25 is when I am hyper-focused on my chip stack and trying to make really good decisions with those chips so I don't end up in that 15 or less,
right.
you know, at the show. So what I guess what I'm talking about here is thinking this hand through all the way to the end from the beginning, which is tough to do, I know. But, you know, so that's what I'm saying. So if you were going to raise your normal 2.5 raise here to 2,000 or something like that, or even min raise to 1,600, what's going to happen when someone re-raises you? Are you going to call? Probably not, because now if you call, now you're going to be short stacked if you don't hit, and this hand really is very speculative, right?
Yeah.
Are you going to fold? Or if you're going to fold, why are you just going to give away 1,600, 2,000 chips when you only have 22 big blinds anyhow? That's pretty painful. So, and neither one of those things I'm looking for to happen. So if I shove, then I take care of all that, right?
Yep.
But also it's pretty ridiculous. Or if I limp, then I can decide, yeah, all right, I'll limp and I'm fine throwing away 800, maybe. But I'm thinking through what's going to happen. I'm just not thinking, you know, hey, this is my normal game. You know, if we're at 50 big blinds, sure, I'm going to probably raise with this under the gun. I like this kind of hand under the gun. But I don't have enough chips to do that right now, I don't think. So.
Okay.
All right, our hero decides to raise to 1,800 and gets two callers. Seat four, which is a 65-ish regular, I'm going to guess age, 65-year-old-ish
yeah.
regular who I see every week in this tournament who plays decent ABC poker with a larger stack than us. And seat eight, a 30-year-old-ish guy in a Red Sox cap, unkempt beard, and orange hoodie who I've never seen before with a stack slightly smaller than mine. Three hands before the break, seat eight raised, 2.5x preflop, and everyone folded quickly. He has folded every other hand fairly quickly preflop. All right, the flop comes, 3 of spades, 10 of hearts, 7 of clubs, and it's first, we're first deck.
Okay, so we have 10-9. I mean, here's the deal, you raise under the gun. So, one, you've taken command of this hand. Two, you're selling that you have ace, ace, king, king, ace, king, ace, queen. So, two of those four hands have an overpair to that board. And even if you don't have that, you could have jack-jack or 10-10 or something. You know, you still have an overpair to that board, a set, or a decent hand. Even if you had 9-9, that's still a decent flop for you. So you're going to have to continue. You can't just, you know, be passive here. Even though you played 10-9 and you're hoping for two clubs and you're hoping for two pair or you're hoping for an open and a straight draw or a flop of the joint, instead of doing that, you've got top pair, and this is what always happens when you play a speculative hand like this. And then get called. So, I mean, you're going to have to take command and bet, but let me see. We bet 18, so we got to 3,600, and then you've got so you've got about 4,500 in the pot or so, maybe a little more than that. So, I don't know. I'd have to bet like 3 grand or so, and I only have 18 from the original 18.
16,000.
Yeah, so, yeah, if I'm going to bet 3, I guess I still can get away with betting 3,000 without having to shove yet, but this is what happens when you bet play speculative hands, especially under the gun. So I'm going to have to bet. 3 grand maybe?
Yeah, that's interesting because actually when I first read this, I was thinking that this is an instant show here. I mean, you got lucky. You played the 10-9. You raised a amount that I didn't think was appropriate for your chip stack. But now you hit your 10, right? And I don't know if I want to get cute at this point. I want to pick off that extra, what is it, less than 6, actually probably more than 6K with the antes in there. That's huge for my chip stack now.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think now I just shove and put somebody to a test, and somebody thinks I've got ace king and just making a big move, and then I've got a pair right now. Plus, I've got some runner outs if I'm really wrong. But I know it seems like a extreme overbet here, but, you know, we played around pre-flop when I don't think we should have, and now we hit our flop, and let's just end this thing. Let's chip up now.
So you're advocating a shove now.
I think. So, I mean, I guess here's the other thing, too. I mean, I guess there could be an argument that if you make a standard bet here, 3,000 might accomplish the same thing without putting your chip stack at risk in case you're up against a set or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it goes back to what we're talking about pre-flop. So what happens now if somebody shoves? I mean, you've got to call, right? You're not going to throw this hand away if somebody shoves, right?
I guess so, yeah. I don't know. Well, that's what I wondered. That was the thing I was thinking about 3,000 would get me to about 13,000. Could I get away from it if somebody shoved and I felt like they did have me beat? Because think about the hands that are going to call you or under the gun raise. Could easily be pocket sevens. Could easily be jack 10. Could be ace 10. I mean, there are hands there that are calling that raise that would have us crushed. And we only have 9-10 as a kicker. So the flop was 3-10-7. Could be pocket threes, made a set. So if I believed somebody shove, I could get away from it for 13. But if I shove, then I can't get away from that. Obviously, I shoved. So it's something to think about. I don't know. I agree with you.
We're down to 13,000 in units now. So, yeah. I mean, I guess this is what I'm talking about at the beginning. We probably made a bad decision getting involved in this hand the way we did with our chip stack. You know, if we were 50 big blinds, it doesn't matter right now, right? You bet 3,000 and somebody raises it. You think about it. Maybe you fold. Maybe you call. Maybe you don't, you know.
Right.
But now, I mean, this would be tragic for us to go down to 13,000 on 10-9 of clubs, right?
Yeah.
And not see past the flop, especially when we flop top pair.
Yeah, just
we're in a bad spot here.
It's a bad spot, yeah, because like I said, if you did bet three, just because you wanted to see if that would be enough to get them to fold, and they were just speculating and they missed, then you get away for betting three, and then you've almost doubled your stack. But if you get the feeling that these guys are really hit it, you could get away from it, and you still have more than 10 big blinds, which you have around your 15 big blinds or so. So I don't know. It's that, like we said, it is. I could go either way on this. I'm definitely not checking. I have to bet.
Well, I mean, I would make a case for checking if you intend to check raise.
Yeah, but you got to be confident these guys are going to do that too.
That's probably a more powerful play than going all in and shutting down the action, right? So if somebody's like, "Oh, okay."
Well, a check raise is a check raise shove, and I don't know if the other guys could fold after that. You know what I mean? So what are you accomplishing? You're getting somebody to call you anyway, so why not just shove?
Right. So if you think you're good right now, that's what you would do. Now, I don't know whether you think you're good right now. I'm not ecstatic about this. I'm just happy that I messed around with a bad hand and hit something.
Yeah.
But it's interesting if you go back to preflop, and if we would have played this two different ways, if we would have shoved, which was one option, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now we're not having any decision here, right? It's already done for us, right? And we hit the 10, and like, well, this is pretty great. And if we had just limped and managed to see a flop for that limp, now we could just limp again here, right?
Right.
And see what happens, and, you know, maybe get to the flop cheaper, and the turn cheaper, and that turn could be a huge card for us, deciding whether we want to commit our stack or not. Right now we just have a pair of tens with bad kicker and some runner outs, but if we hit another club or, eight or a six or something like that, then now we feel a little bit more confident, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm going to stick with having the bet. I just don't know. I mean, I don't think I could shove. I don't think I could shove here. I just feel like the hands that are out there, you know, I want to get some sort of more definition on what they have. If I just shove and the guy insta-calls, I'm screwed, you know? I have to bet, though.
I do have runner outs. I mean, it's not the situation I want. I certainly don't want somebody to snap call and turn over pocket sevens, don't get me wrong, but
right.
Do have outs. It's not like I'm drawing dead at that point.
Right. Yeah, I don't want that to be the
reason. But yeah, I mean, we set ourselves up to have to continuation bet here or give up control of the hand. So that's the situation we're in now. So if we see bet and somebody raises all in, then I think we got a call. So, you know, I guess check and just hope that it checks around and then we get a card that helps us on the turn. But
see, that surprises me that you would say that because I would think that you're the one that could get away from that hand. If you bet 3,000 and you got a distinct feeling when this guy shoves that you're beat, and you have 13,000 chips left, you have more than 10 big blinds. You have around 14 or so. To me, that's your wheelhouse right there. That's what you play. You have the ability to get away from hands like that. To me, I'm the one that's like, I can't get away from it. I'm called. But for me, I always think of you as somebody that could realize, hey, I'm going to make a good lay down here. I only have one pair of no kicker, and I believe this guy. I can get away from this hand with 13,000 chips. I'm still alive. I still got plenty of poker left if I can, you know. It surprises me that you would think that you'd have to call if somebody shoved after you bet $3,000.
I totally agree with that, other than just how the hand is played. I mean, I wouldn't have played this hand this way. So,
right, that's true, too.
I'm responding the way the hand is played, and I know I've got 1,800 in this already and top pair here, and it's a different story than had we played one of the other ways that I would have played. But yeah, generally speaking, I think 13 big blinds I can do something with and hang on to. But there's a lot of money in this pot right now, and I've got top pair, and you know, I'm not convinced anybody else. I mean, we're right now we're talking about sets, which, you know, is possible, but it's, you know.
So ace-10, too. Ace-10, jack-10. Those are hands that I think would call a raise and would probably shove or re-raise us if they didn't believe we had ace-king or something. They would put us to a test and protect their hand, too, with, you know, 10-7
out there. We have even more outs against those hands if we're wrong. So, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I
just wouldn't have gotten this situation, so it's a bad situation to be in. So
yeah, that's true, too.
I'm responding differently than you probably think I would.
Yeah. All right, so what happens?
All right, we're here with checks. Seat 4 checks, and seat 8 bets 2,200.
See, now we've given up control of this hand, and now we're going to have to call 2,200 or shove. You know what I mean? Not going to re-raise $6,000 and only have, what, geez, $10,000 left. So now he's given up control. We don't know what this guy has now. If we bet $3,000, what's plus 2,200 is suspiciously small to me. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's not even a third of the pot.
Yeah, it's almost a third of the pot. So yeah.
So, I hate that. So what do I do now? I check.
I think
raise?
This goes back to your decision at the beginning. If you're gonna check here, you've made your decision on how you're going to play this hand when you make that check. You either decide if somebody bets, I'm folding, or if somebody bets, I'm going all in.
Right.
You have to make that decision before you make that decision to check. So I don't know what we decided to do, but there really can't be any thought, I don't think, at this point. Now we just got to do with whatever we said we were going to do if this happened.
Yeah, I couldn't call. I mean, now that he's bet 2,200, I either fold and believe him, or I say, screw it, calling is just, you know, a re-raising, a check raise. It has to be a shove. So I either fold or I shove.
If you fold, you have plenty of chips, but enough you can maneuver. But again, you know, we wasted 1,800 on this hand for no reason then, which is a problem. And the problem with checking is we'd have no idea what seat 8 has, right? I mean, you could be trying to steal. I mean, this is a pretty vanilla board, so you got to think that if you're not willing, the two people ahead of you aren't willing to bet this board, then they must have whiffed, and now you can steal it, right? So it very well could be a steal, but it could also be somebody, like you said, with ace 10 just saying, hey, I'm going to go ahead and take this down now, and that may catch up to me. But we have no idea now, so that's the problem with checking here.
And because it's such a small bet now, would you think a call might be? I was thinking...
No, I'm still not calling.
It's still not calling. Okay, because you have, what, 16,000 to 22, because you still have 13,800.
There's very little that's going to come on the turn that's going to really help me. I mean, there's going to be some cards that come on the turn that can make my hand feel better. But really, we're waiting for a 10 or a 9. And even a 9 is probably not a card we want to see, right? So,
right.
You know, otherwise, you know, we're going to get a club or a straight card that gives us a few more outs and maybe feel a little bit better. But if I'm calling this 2,200, I'm committed now. So, I think...
I don't know, that's why I was asking, because you're still only down, you still have 13-something left, which is still, you know, almost 20 big blinds. It's like 18 big blinds or something.
Yeah, now we've done 5,000 to this hand for no reason.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, I don't know, my chips are valuable at this point, so
yeah,
what I do with them.
Yeah, you got to wield it while you can. All right, yeah, I think that when they bet 2,200, I'm going to shove, or I'm going to fold. So I hate that check. I guess I would shove. It's just weird. Check raise shove, I guess. So that fell into the plan that you were hoping for earlier. So if you're going to follow that line, yeah.
The other thing is that we've only lost 12 people in this tournament, and we have 16 more to go before we even cash.
True.
So at this point, this is a hand where if you're right and double through now you've got some room to get to that spot, which right now is way off in the distance, even cashing, right?
Yeah.
And if you get knocked out, then you've just saved yourself a lot of a couple more hours of play where you're not going to get anything anyhow, maybe. And it can go in a cash game. So that's the other consideration, too, I think, at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, all right, ultimately, I'm going to shove. Because I don't think I can let go of top pair here, even though that bet was so suspicious. But I do have a feeling we're behind, though. I just got this weird feeling this guy has, like, Jack 10, Ace 10, because it... But he could be floating,
too. The situation we got ourselves into, so...
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. now I want to fold. I don't know why. I can't see letting go of a top pair, but I only have a 9 kicker. That's a thing. What are you doing? You're shoving?
I'm going to shove here, but...
All right, to make it interesting, I'll fold.
I decided before I checked, after I made the mistake pre-flop, that when I check now, I'm check raising.
So. I'm going to fold now just because you shoved. That way it'll be right, two different next. Answers. All right.
All right, our hero says, I think for about 3 seconds before calling, and C4 folds instantly. All right, so we got three different options here.
All right, so he says... C4 folds. Okay, so now we've called. Wow.
Yeah, and he called. I would have shoved. You would have folded.
Wow. Every awesome. Which way but loose.
All right. The turn is the 4 of clubs. So our board now is tray of spades, 10 of hearts, 7 of clubs, 4 of clubs. So that's kind of the backup that I was talking about that we get, and we're first to act.
A shove. I mean, we've picked up the club draw. We're now, clearly right? in his hand. You don't have that much money if you're going to bet. What are you going to do if he bets now? Are you going to fold with the club draw, too? You might as well just shove and try to take it down. If not, you got your out. So I'm shoving.
Unless you think he's going to bet again, and that's the only way you're going to get chips out of him, and you think you're ahead, and you can do the check raise now since you didn't do it last time.
Right.
But other than that, yeah, absolutely. I think now you just shove and say, hey, you know, I've got a ton of outs now, and if you got me beaten, I've got outs.
Yep, I'm shoving.
All right, so our hero immediately bets 3,400, leaving 10-5 behind.
That's not. See, I mean, that's what are you gonna do if he re-raises you now? 10-5 is not enough to fold. So you might just get it all in there and get that big pot and double your stack instead of, you know, I would shove. I would shove.
Yeah. All right. C8 stares at the board, stares at his chips, before grabbing his remaining chips and placing them gently in the center of the table. It's an extra 5,600 to call.
Yeah, I can't fold. There's no way.
Right.
Yeah.
I think for about a minute before reluctantly calling, C8 immediately flips over his cards, ace of spades, 10 of spades, top pair, top kicker, needing a club or 9 to avoid being crippled, the river is a queen of hearts, and I'm down to 4.5 big blinds just like that.
Yeah, ace 10, there it is. I had the sneaky suspicion that ace 10 or jack 10 was out there. Just felt like those are hands that could, and plus it's hand of the week, so you're always wondering how you're going to lose.
Right.
You know what I mean? But I figure the Cosenza is the hand that does it. So let's see. So the guy had ace 10 and he bet 2,200. So he wasn't really afraid when he bet 2,200. He wasn't really afraid of the next card because it was a pretty innocuous flop. I mean, 8-9 is the only hand you're really afraid of on that flop. And so why be afraid of it? Might as well try to. He's trying to string the guy along, top pair, top kicker.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to what I was talking about when we were talking this through, is that, you know, you had an undergun raiser that checks, another guy that calls, so no one's showing any interest in this, and it's not a board that anybody needs to protect anything on, so it seems like a whiff for everyone, so why not put a bet out? And yeah, it might have been a little light, but considering that no one showed any interest, it's, you know, again, the big part of poker is betting the minimum amount that's going to be effective.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, I think he probably picked a good number. Unfortunately, we called. So, and then actually ended up being fortunate we called. Crazy. All right, so he goes on and says, I double up on the next hand, only to run my sevens in the seat fours, eights, 10 hands later, knock me out of the tournament. Seat eight, use my donation to propel his way to a 4-way deal, earning him $525 as the chip leader at the time the deal was made. How do I know this? Because I'm the guy in seat eight, not seat one.
Oh, jeez. You know, we got to have a moratorium on these hands. We can't have these people doing this anymore. Now we gotta go. Well, we're gonna go through the whole thing now and say, oh, look,
no, 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 we're not gonna go through it all day. So I let it go because he says it's his first live tournament in 28 months and he cashed. And he think he played his hand very well, which I agree he did. And he was confused by C1's play, which I was completely confused by it all the way through. So I agree with that. So that's why I gave him a pass.
I do.
And I'm like, let's give Steven a pass this week.
I think that he played it well, other than the 2200. I would have bet a little more. I realize we talked about it being effective. Yeah. He got lucky, though. I mean, to me, what if the guy shoves on you now and he's saying, haha, check raise. A check raise there tells you he has ace, ace, king, king, queen, queen, jack, jack. He's literally telling you, I can afford to check and not have you bet and give you a free card because I'm so strong. It's so suspicious when the under-the-gun raiser doesn't bet the flop. You know, okay, sometimes it's because they don't have the, you know, the balls to bet because they've had ace-king and whiffed. But generally, when an under-the-gun raiser doesn't see bet, a lot of times it's, hey, I've got a huge hand, and I'm just stringing you along. So for you to bet 2,200, and you got, I think he got lucky here. I mean, obviously, he, you know, won the hand. And I would have bet the ace, probably would have bet it, just to see what happens. But if he had come along... Or bet more, are you going to let that ace-10 go? I don't know. Would you let that ace-10 go if the guy check-raises all in after that?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and pick on Steven since we let him come in with the old switcheroo.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
A couple things that I'm worried about his play here. One, remember, he was shorter stack than the guy that we thought was him, right?
Yep.
So he had less than 22 big blinds at this point. And he decided to call, granted it was on the button, with a weak ace against under-the-gun raiser.
Under-the-gun raiser, that's right.
It was fairly short in chips, too. So I have to wonder how good my hand is at that point. I mean, I've gotten really good at folding ace-queen, ace-jack, ace-ten to any raise pre-flop these days, let alone when I'm short-stacked against an under-the-gun raiser. I think I pass on this hand altogether.
Yeah.
Or if I don't believe the other gun guy, then I'm going to show. But there's just no reason that I would ever feel that I couldn't believe him in that spot. So I wouldn't be in his hand to begin with if I was him either. So, and then on the flop, I think at this point, man, it's the same situation as the other guy. Like now, I hit my card. I'm not going to let anybody catch up to me or anything like that. I'm shoving there.
Yeah, especially since his stack is way smaller.
Right.
Yeah, and right, his stack is way smaller than the guy that we thought was the hero in his hand. If he only had 5,600 or whatever it was at the end, and the other guy had 13,000, you know, or 10,000 behind, that means he had 5,000 less to start the hand, which was 12,000 chips. So he started this hand with 12,000 and called more than 10% of his hand on a raised preflop. I would have definitely shoved a lot earlier if I'm going to play the hand. If not, I would have folded it. There's no way I'm playing that hand with an under-the-gun raiser, ace-10. I mean, and it would suit it, ace-10 of spades, and you're on the button, but that's still not... That's not the place to do that. He got lucky.
That short.
Yeah, he got lucky. He absolutely got lucky. But, another one of those hands. And that's the other thing, too. Now it's like, so who saw the seven hands thus far? Was it our hero? Was it the other guy? Who, you know, all this stuff just confuses me now. I'm going to have to have lunch or something and let my stomach settle. All right, another good show. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Anti-Up is a production of antiupmagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@antiupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.